Hello, this is Frank Dunn reading for you from the Norwood Record, the August 20th edition, hot off the press on the internet, on behalf of the Talking Information Center in beautiful downtown Marshfield, Massachusetts. Front page stories about the Norwood Art Connection and Lynch and Roth, R-O-A-T-H, face off. So let's do the political one. Both of those stories by Jeff Sullivan, the 8th District Congressional candidates, incumbent Stephen Lynch and challenger Patrick Roth, participated in a public forum last week held by the League of Women Voters, LWV, Massachusetts chapter. The forum was moderated by the LWV Massachusetts co-president, Courtney Henderson, who lives in Fall River, and is not a constituent of the 8th District. The event was presented in conjunction with the LWV Norwood, LWV Boston, LWV Stoughton / Sharon, LWV Westwood, Walpole, Dedham, all those with slashes, and LWV Weymouth and LWV Massachusetts. The forum focused on several topics facing the federal government, mainly orbiting the policies of U.S. President Donald Trump and what they would do to fight them, but also on local issues like affordability, housing, and medical costs. Though these did intersect with the president's agenda during the forum. The main differences between the two candidates, as they agreed on many singular issues, was that Roth was pitching that he was full of new ideas to bring to Congress, while Lynch emphasized that experience is needed to take on the current Republican Party. It is about providing a compelling, optimistic message that resonates across the country and builds majorities, and I am convinced that the path forward is going to look differently than from the past, Roth said. We cannot keep retreading the same thing. We cannot keep sending the same people down, and we cannot trust that the system that got us here is going to continue to deliver. A big issue that caused some apparent consternation between the candidates was that of funding. Roth contended that Lynch gets a lot of money from corporate political action committees, PACs, and Lynch contended that Roth also took money from PACs. And there is a bit of truth to both of those claims. Lynch, according to records on the Federal Elections Commission website, did collect a lot of donations from unions. And he says below, including the Plumbers and Pipe Fitters, United Food and Commercial Workers International, the Carpenters Union, the International Association of Sheet Metal, Air, Rail and Transportation Workers, PAC, the employees of RTX Corporation, PAC, RTX's Raytheon, and the Teamsters. Let me be clear, Lynch said. The PACs that I accepted money from are the iron workers, he said. When I was an iron worker, and they still do today, I was 9 cents an hour, $3.60 a week. That's their PAC. My opponent has held 4 meetings. You've probably got them all, and they're all from PACs that he's working with. But Lynch also took donations from corporate PACs like the BlackRock Funds Services Group, LLC, PAC, which appears to be a subsidiary of the international conglomerate BlackRock, Inc. The FEC also stated that he took money from the TD Bank U.S. Holding Company, PAC, and the Massachusetts Mutual Life Insurance Company, PAC. We need to take corporate PAC money out of politics, Roweth said. The campaign is not taking corporate PAC money. While there were no corporate PACs specifically in Roth's FEC filing, there was $2,800 that appeared to be donated by Meta in 14 $200 donations. Roth's campaign stated that they are in fact not donations, but rather that one of the campaign's cards was compromised and the apparent thief used the $2,800 worth of purchases from Facebook Meta. The receipt of those funds was actually a refund. According to the campaign, the purchases were documented. Roth also received much of his donations from individuals, though much was channeled by the organization Act Blue, which describes itself as the fundraising infrastructure behind Democrat politicians. Lynch also said some donations go through Act Blue. Affordability was a big issue during the forum. Lynch and Roweth went back and forth on it in several questions, with Lynch focusing on reversing Trump's tariffs and also actions to reduce costs, while Roth had more long-term solutions for reducing prices. The conversation came to a head when the Medicaid / Medicare / Social Security questions came up. LWV, the Legal Women Voters, of course, asked both candidates what they would do to protect those three institutions, with Roweth answering first. Roweth said figuring out how to expand Medicare and Medicaid to more U.S. residents would help reduce healthcare costs and preventative medicine. He said for Social Security, making it easier for more people to come to the United States, increasing the workforce and getting a positive ratio of current workers seems versus retiring seniors would help to make not only Social Security more financially viable, but the country as a whole. WHOLE. We need to make this country easier for people to live in and have families and want to participate in the workforce, and fixing healthcare, childcare, housing costs. He said, this is the long-term solution, fixing all of them. Lynch went on to point out Roweth's work with Ropes and Gray LLP, which has had on numerous occasions large-scale business transactions, including several with Bain Capital and the Nippon Steel purchase of U.S. Steel. Quote, that's rich, he said. Let's talk about for-profit healthcare and the impact that has on the cost of healthcare in this country. You seem to have forgotten what you've been doing for the last 10 years. This is a quote from Don Quixote. Show me your company and I'll show you what you are. My opponent has been working for Ropes and Gray for the last 10 years. Ropes and Gray is famous for two things. One, they bust unions for a living. Two, they push for-profit healthcare like Cerberus Capital and advise for for-profit healthcare providers in taking over not-for-profit hospitals, in sucking the federal money out and paying off their investors. That's a horrible system that should not be allowed in this country. Yet that is the business that my opponent has been in for the past 10 years. And that is the honest truth. Lynch's solution, at least when it comes to healthcare, is to eliminate all for-profit healthcare. Ropes and Gray has a Wikipedia page dedicated to large-scale cases and dealings. While it's true that Roath has had most of his donations from individuals and not PACs or organizations, several donating individuals listed their employment in the donation filings, and 10 of them were employed by Bain Capital, two employees of DraftKings, and one from Lockheed Martin. A total of 96 employees of Ropes and Gray donated to Roath's campaign. I know you object to the law firm work, and that's fine, but this is a quote, and I'm really proud of my background, actually. He said, I started working in politics, working for former Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick. I did practice law. I chaired a common cause. I've been in the Justice Department as a law clerk, in the State Department as a Fulbright Fellow, campaigns, the White House, and I'm really proud of it. Happy to discuss it, but none of it has to do with for-profit healthcare. Roath then pointed out a bill apparently to break up Big Medicine Act from Congressperson Elizabeth Warren as an example of what the current Congressperson could do in office to help bring costs down. He said he would co-sponsor a bill immediately at once in office, and he said Lynch has yet to do so. For immigration efforts, Roath said it could include sensible controls at the border, but it must include a pathway to citizenship for people who have been in this country a long time to become citizens. That's so important. What we cannot do is buy into the Republican attempt to weaponize immigrants in this country, Roath said, to make them seem like the villains and blame all the problems on them. Everything from housing to anything you can think of, it's an attempt to turn our communities against each other. Roath went through the voting record of Lynch, including the creation of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, in 2001, to find the to fund the organization, and voting in favor of the U.S. House of Representatives, a resolution that in part thanked ICE. This is an agency that has outlived its purpose. It exceeded its constitutional prerogative. It should be dismantled, and the people involved in pressing these marked agencies out our streets should be prosecuted and jailed, Roath said. It's not. We can't have domestic immigration enforcement. If you love that in your mind, we can do that, but not at the agency as it exists today. It has to go. Lynch defended his record, and it's a quote. First of all, I am an original, a co-sponsor of the DREAM Act to allow children to become citizens of the U.S. in the U.S. At a time when that was not a very popular act. He said that was probably 20 years ago, and I have been a supporter of that ever since. Trump has used the immigration issue to turn us against each other. He really has. When Trump says immigrants are poisoning the blood out of our country, your Nazi alarm should go off. Lynch said ICE's funding was set at the U.S. border. While that's still technically true, ICE and U.S. Customs and Border Patrol jurisdiction is 100 miles from the coastline or border. Many international airports are also within those two organizations' jurisdiction. Lynch said he believes ICE's current operations are illegal. Quote, let me be clear. I have repeatedly voted to defund ICE, he said. One of the major pieces of legislation that we have put forward on our watch after Alex Preddy and Renee Good, G-O-O-D-E, were killed was to force, well, completely re-engineer ICE, force them to take their masks off, force them to put their name plates on, and force them to put body cameras on, and force them to completely comply with the law, get them back on our border and out of our neighborhoods, and return a sense of stability where ICE is no longer a threat in our communities. Now for something completely different, here's the art connection. Jeff Sullivan story, page one. Longtime readers may remember the Norwood Art Association, which unfortunately dissolved last year. Since that time, local artist and community advocate Mary Paz has been working on creating the Norwood Art Connection, which says in its mission statement that it is aimed at connecting artists, businesses, and the Norwood community to bring art front and center. Last Wednesday, the group had its first gallery at Tax Solutions in the center of downtown. The gallery featured local artists, board members, and others. There was kind of our first step, because what we're going to do now that we've said hello, now that we've said hello, is we're going to start putting together a public artists and a listing, a portfolio of public artists and a listing of businesses. She said, ultimately, we'll do things like street festivals and shows, really a big expansion of what I was trying to do with the Norwood Art Association. But right now, we need to build up enough people. At the gallery, Mary Paz, and I don't understand this, Mary Paz is like one word, all lowercase, but it's up to you, explained that the big idea is to harness rhythm, artists and businesses owners into a symbiotic relationship. We want art and businesses working together. They are an essential economic and cultural force in a community, she said. This is a soft opening, and we just formed, and we wanted to get out there and say, hey, we're new in town. That's a quote. Though it hasn't been easy, Mary Paz said, several businesses have already expressed interest in hosting exhibits like Woodruff. She said eventually she wants to have a street festival where artists set up shop right in front of, well, the shops, where the artists are right outside the door, she said. It's a way of getting people into the business, increasing the foot traffic, while also giving artists more places to show, because it's really hard to get out there and be seen. Art, it's a quote, art brings a real strong economic basis for a town, she said. If I can get this going and then find someone to take it over for me, because I'm not exactly a spring chicken, then I think in the future the town will be considering art and artists and cultural things in its planning, like other towns do. That's what I'm hoping. Tax Solutions Inc. owner and Norwood Art Connection treasurer Susanna Murphy said she's done events with Mary Paz in the past, like the Norwood Art Walk, and she's excited to see more with the connection. Though she said Meeting Mary Paz was almost a stranger than fiction. I've done at least one a quarter, sometimes more, she said. I moved here in 2021 and I had this whole wall and I didn't want anybody to put up anything tacky or cheesy and look at it for the next 10 years, right? So I thought, I wish I could bring in some local artists, and Mary Paz walked in the door literally the next week. Murphy said she's been doing a bunch of galleries with other artists, like photographer Jonathan Cardoni, in the last 10 years, and she's said she never charges a commission. There's a service to the community, she said. Murphy and was raised a family focused on social justice and provides a lot of services for the community, like free tax preparation for some seniors who rely on Social Security. Some only have $16,000 a year and they can't pay that much, so I just do it for them. I grew up with parents who did a lot of social justice, volunteering, and doing good works. We were Irish Catholic, and so it's definitely something I've always done my whole life, and like this, I definitely love it. I never met so many people I wouldn't have otherwise met. Board member and Norwood muralist Tara Bilata said she joined the connection because the mission struck a chord with her. I liked her ideas for connecting artists and businesses because of it was something I was trying to do on my own with my art, she said. But I also want the support and help of other artists. Bilata will be unveiling the new mural on the Carroll Building on the site of 534 Washington Street, Cappy's Coins and Stamps at 11 Norwood Art Collection. We'll have a booth as well. For Wednesday's opening, and Bilata said she was really glad she came. It's turned out really great, she said. I didn't think so many people would show up and listen, so glad they did. I'm glad we got a word out. Then I had a lot of really positive conversation with people, and I met some new artists, which is always cool. Board member Iesehia, Krasik, said she stated her a watercolor painting only this year. She started them. I have meetings back to back, and the painting started with my friends, and I would if we had like 90 seconds between meetings. I'll go and I'll paint, she said. It really refreshes me and makes me happy. Krasik said she feels it allows her to decompress and not strain herself too much at the meetings. I'm using one side of my brain for the paintings, and then I get to use the other side for something I enjoy, she said. Quote, I've been working with Mary Paz through the Norwood Cultural Council, and she's been talking about this as something she really wanted to do, she said. I'm so proud that she's actually brought it to life. I mean, you have these businesses here in Norwood, and you have these artists too, and it's bringing people into a space and community. Back to school, opening information, elementary schools, grades, kindergarten, 1, 2, 3, 4, first day of school, Wednesday, September 2nd, of course, this year. 7:50 opening bell, 2:50 rather. 7:50 opening bell, 2:05 dismissal. Principals will communicate new family and kindergarten orientation directly to their school communities. Middle school, 5, 6, 7, and 8. First day of school, Wednesday, September 2nd, 8:45 a.m. Opening bell, 3:20 p.m. dismissal. Dr. Frasek, a principal, will include information about drop-off procedures for the first day of school in her Parent Square newsletter. High school, 9, 10, 11, and 12 grades. First day will be also Wednesday, September 2nd, 8:10 a.m., opening bell, 2:50, dismissal p.m. New student orientation on August 24th from 10 a.m. till noon at Norwood High School. And preschool orientation and preschool classes at 9:30 a.m. and to 12:30 p.m. on Wednesday, September 2nd. Preschool classes Thursday, September 3rd. Morning session 8:30 to 11. Afternoon schedule 12 till 2:30. First full day session, the full day session rather, 8:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Principal Noonan will communicate additional information around logistics, including transportation procedures during the pre-K orientation on September 2nd, 9:30 or 12:30 p.m. So that's the information we have about the joyous back to school time here in beautiful Norwood. To advertise in the Norwood Record, call 617-361-8400-3618400-617 area. This has been Frank Dunn, reading to you from the Norwood Record on behalf of the Talking Information Center. And I want everybody to promise me that they're going to get out there and have safe weekend.